This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The Clarets have two tough games away at Wigan and at home to Millwall, and we preview the West Brom away game this Friday evening. This is the No Nay Never podcast. Good evening and welcome to the No Nay Never podcast. You're in for a treat this week. It's a bumper edition, where we'll do a quick analysis of the Wigan game at the weekend and an in-depth analysis of last night's victory against Millwall at the Turf. Also, in this edition, we will do the standard preview show, looking ahead to the crunch game at the Hawthorns, where we play West Brom live on Sky Sports this Friday evening at 8 p.m. Joining me this evening are regular Dave Roberts and Newbie, making a second appearance, I believe, she might correct me, on the analysis show. It's Charlotte. How are you doing, guys? Start with you, Dave. How are you feeling?
Very well, thank you. It's not long since we last spoke, Adam.
I know, coming thick and fast, this championship, isn't it?
It's hard to keep up.
All fun and games so far, though. Welcome, Charlotte. How are you this evening?
Well, it's hard not to be buzzing after the last few results we've had, isn't it? So definitely feeling the hype at the moment, and I'm ready for the next game.
Excellent. Yeah, let's get stuck into it then, because there's plenty to cover tonight. Starting off with Wigan at the weekend, what were your thoughts after that result, Charlotte?
Well, it were coming, weren't it? We'd all been saying it. We said it's about time. When it all slots together, we're gonna get our comeuppance, we're going to batter somebody, and it would definitely come in. And what's not to love about it, eh? What's not to love? People are trying to, you know, see both sides. They're a bit negative about the penalty, whatever. I don't care anymore. You know, five goals, what's not to love about it? It'll get us celebrating, seeing some of the lads absolutely buzzing as well. It's so great to see them when they're celebrating. I didn't get a chance to watch it. I were helping my parents move out this weekend, so I was very busy. And I had a quick look at my phone halfway through, and we were 2-0 up. I was like, oh, great. And as I was looking at my phone, it went 2-1. And I thought, that's it. I'm not looking for the rest of the game. I can't be doing it. It's going to be a repeat of Blackpool. I'm not feeling it. And I looked at the end of the match and saw the result there. And I couldn't believe my eyes, honestly. I thought, what if I missed here? I was meant to be going. And I ended up not going. And yeah, we're absolutely gutted I didn't go, but buzzing about the result.
Yeah, it's one of them. And you'd definitely rather have the 5-1 win. But if there's a chance to go, you want to be there for those sort of games. As Charlotte just mentioned there, Dave, it must have been playing on the fans and the players' mind, having gone ahead, two goals ahead against Blackpool, and then thrown it away and ended up with a disappointing draw, going 2-0 up and then conceding a silly goal and facing a lot of pressure. What were you thinking at that point?
Well, yeah, Burnley had a really good start, got two goals up, and then Wigan did have a spell in the game. They had a spell about 10-15 minutes before half-time. They obviously got the goal. And then also they started off the second half really well. They had a really good chance to equalise not long before Burnley got the third goal. So it could have been very different if that had gone in, but we weathered the storm this time, unlike against Blackpool, where we did let them back into the game and we didn't do that at Wigan, and we pushed on and were confident in the second half. We just had that dicey spell just either side of half-time. And there will be times in games like that. You can't, even when you're playing really well, you can't dominate games for a full 90 minutes. So we have to keep the concentration and make sure that when we do get into the lead, which we weren't doing, other than obviously scoring against Huddersfield in the other games, we'd other than Blackpool, we'd gone behind, hadn't we? So we're having to come back. I think now, if we get the lead, we need to be a little bit more savvy about that. And I think we did that really well. Jumping forwards, like when we will talk about the Millwall game, we did do that. But across the season, that's the thing we're going to have to be wary of, I think.
Yeah, I think it's important that it didn't become a theme, because the more it happens, obviously, the more it is in the players' minds. I'm assuming you've seen the goals, Charlotte, from Wigan. What did you make of the third goal? Brownhill playing Teller through, and to a lot of people in the stadium, and then obviously the replays have shown he was offside. I don't know if you want to go into whether you like VAR, don't like VAR, but obviously it benefited on that occasion, and obviously that was a really big moment in the game. What did you make of that third goal?
Yeah, well, like we said, if we're being technical about it, we're offside, weren't it? But we've been on the wrong end of that decision plenty of times over the years, really, haven't we? Even when VAR were there, we've been on the wrong end, really. I am absolutely loving not having VAR this season. I think not only is it that you get them cheeky decisions every now and then, but at the same time, the fact that you just have a quick glance at liner, make sure the flag's not up, and go absolutely mental, and you're not waiting for 5 minutes thinking, have I just been proper elated for no reason? I really don't miss it. I don't miss it in the game at all. I know there'll be some times over the season where it doesn't work in our favour that we don't have VAR, where if we do, maybe we would have got more calls and whatever, and it works both ways. But I think just for that pure goal and the whole being able to celebrate properly, I'm glad it's not in the Championship at all. If it worked perfectly every time, it'd be great, but it doesn't. And I think sometimes it shows even more room for bias, and sometimes I don't know how they're not embarrassed by the decisions that they make when it's so clear on the screen as well that they're wrong. But yeah, human error, it plays part of the game, and it's a part of the game I grow to love. It'll work against us definitely, but I'll take that on Saturday where it worked in our favour for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree with you with the goal celebrations. I'd kind of forgotten, like, we'd been 2 years with VAR in the Premier League, and it has just been a joy to just actually celebrate goals like that. What's your opinion on that, Dave?
I'm in full agreement. Yeah, I think when VAR came in, I thought it was a good thing. Obviously, we had the goal line technology prior to that. I think that works really well. That is more black and white in terms of it's definitely that decision, whereas there is still too much umming and ahhing about the decisions on the VAR, and they take 3 or 4 minutes to decide on it for marginal decisions. And even then, there isn't the consensus view that that was the right decision. So for me, the way it's worked, I agree with everything that Charlotte said on that, basically, in that if they could get even 90% of decisions right via VAR, you'd kind of take the tolerance the other way. But it's not even that. I think there are so many instances where it's not working. And then on the flip side for that, you do have the game being not the game it was in terms of the people there in the ground being able to enjoy the goals in the same way. So I think it's been a breath of fresh air back in the Championship without it. And I shan't miss it for the rest of this season.
No, me too. I think another thing is just, I kind of agree with you there. And I think they are trying to get to the right decision, but the fan experience is terrible. It's not even as if they're communicating it well after they've made the decision. Fans just don't know what's going on. Anyway, before we really go down a rabbit hole, because I could probably talk about this all evening, is there anything else you want to add from the Wigan game? Obviously, we killed the game off when it opened up. Really positive signs of things to come, positive performances off the bench, which we'll probably mention against Millwall as well, but different players. What are you making about the five sub rule so far, Charlotte? And do you think that's benefiting us more now than it would have done in the Premier League?
Definitely. We've got more range on the bench now, haven't we? We've got more people to bring off who are going to make an impact on the game. A five sub rule in the Premier League weren't going to work for us, really. It'd work in everyone's benefit apart from our own, and they'd be bringing these massive players off the bench, and we'd be knackered on the pitch. But you can see, I think it will work for us this season. It's one of them things, isn't it? I think a lot of I was very much why they're bringing five subs on, you know, why is that going to be a thing? That when we first started, I thought it's always been three for a reason, you know, but I can see it definitely working in our benefit from now on, especially like we're going to be making subs sooner. You can see that type of thing. You can see the way it's affecting our gameplay, and it will be more beneficial with our style of play now. It wouldn't have suited our style of play last season, and that's fine, but it certainly will suit us much better now.
Yeah, completely agree there. Anything else to add from Wigan, Dave?
Well, Charlotte mentioned about one penalty. I think there possibly could have been two, couldn't there? Because there was the one where Johan Berg-Gudmundsson was brought down. I assume that was the one that was being referred to. But there was also the incident, wasn't there, when Tendai Dariqua got injured. He managed to injure himself, but that could have been a penalty as well. So if we're being harsh on that, we could have possibly had two penalties. But again, VAR wasn't involved. They probably weren't going to be given, but... yeah, we took our chances well. We were clinical with the chances we got on the day. The score perhaps flattered us slightly. A couple of late goals as well. But yeah, five goals away from home, you're never going to complain about that.
No, and talk about substitutes' impact. Obviously, Bastian came off the bench and got a goal and an assist. There weren't many of them under the previous regime, were there? I think we went a good year and a half without a substitute scoring or assistant for us. So long may that continue. And then we marched onto the turf, everyone feeling confident on Tuesday night. How are we feeling before the game, Charlotte?
Like we said, we all had a bit of confidence there, didn't we? Again, I'm very nervous when it comes to football. I'm sure you've all picked up on that by now. It's not very good for my health at all, but I like to be a little bit more composed about it, not get carried away until I start walking on the turf, and then I'm like, oh yeah, we're going to win every game, you know, we're going to win league, you know, there's no problems there. But you definitely, it's nice. I've missed the feeling of walking onto a football match and thinking, you know what, we might actually do all right, because we didn't really in the last season, did we? We definitely struggled. You were walking on and thinking, what's this going to be at the end here? But walking on and thinking, we've got a team that are wanting to play, you know, the football style that we're seeing at the moment, we can get some good goals in here. We've proven we can score multiple goals, even if we have conceded a couple as well. And it is an exciting win. It does get you feeling more excited for the game, I feel. And yeah, definitely nervous, always nervous. And I don't think that'll, even if we go on a massive winning run, I don't think that'll ever stop. And but definitely excited as well getting on there. And I've missed it as well. I've missed getting on the turf over the summer and things. And I like an evening game. I think it brings a whole different type of vibe to it. And I thought it was fantastic last night. I thought that the ground were fantastic. The support were fantastic. We have spells of going quiet, but everywhere does. But I thought overall it were a good atmosphere. It were a good thing to be involved in. And 3 points is the best way to top it off.
Yeah, so I just forgot one thing from the Wigan game. If you want more reaction from the guys on the No Name Ever team, we posted some post-match videos. I think, well, Robbie, myself, Rich, Tom, and a drunken George all put the thoughts on Twitter on Saturday night. So go and check that out.
You'd never do that, would you, Adam?
Absolutely not. Oh God! Last season, I'm trying to keep my nose clean this season. Anyway, you had a bit of a different experience at the turf last night, Dave. Do you want to tell everyone about that?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to win the a competition, to win a couple of tickets. So yeah, I was in the longside hospitality and in the padded seats. I'm not used to watching the games so low down. I'm usually further back, so it was a slightly different experience from that point of view. But yeah, fantastic game, and Burnley did really well.
Yeah, has it all been done up in there now? I've seen a few like new pitches and stuff. Is it like everyone knows what the old long side looked like inside with all the partitions and stuff? But was it as good as the investment suggests it should be?
Yeah, I'd been in before, so I went. They had the anniversary dinner for the 91-92 team. It was the 30th anniversary of them winning the fourth division. And there was a dinner there, a couple of hundred people there that night. They've changed it now, whereas it used to be like the full length of the room that they could kind of half off with the screens. Now it's just like one room, and rather the bar being at one end, at the side, the bar's at one end. So it's a a bit more open from that point of view. Then the other end, there's kind of boxes and player boxes down the other end of the stand. So it's all been done up. It's fantastic food as usual in there. Chris Gibbs and his team do really well. But yeah, it was a different experience, but a good night all round.
Excellent. And obviously we started the game on the front foot. What did you make of the first half, Charlotte, and the way obviously Burnley approached it, but also the way Millwall approached it? And how are you feeling, obviously, when we got to half time and we weren't, it was same old story at home. Three draws from three that are obviously playing on my mind. Anyway, I don't know if you were playing on other fans' mind. You really want that first home win. Were you positive at half time? What did you make of the first half?
The first half was very much the story of our season so far, wasn't it? We were trying to press, we were trying to pass the ball about, and we just weren't getting that end product. It was very similar to what we've been seeing from us earlier on in the season from the other games. And I think it was very much a patience game. I know you touched a little bit on what did I think of the way Millwall approached it. Well, I think I spoke to Natalie a couple of podcasts ago about the physicality of other teams and how we're going to have to be prepared for that. And I said, I don't begrudge them it. And I still don't begrudge them a physicality. But I think there's a difference between being a physical team and being a team that looked like they were just blatantly being nasty at some points. There were some challenges where I thought that's not on. And I'm surprised they still had 11 men by half time, sorry. Because some of it was, I thought it's a nasty challenge, you know, and like I said, I don't begrudge your physicality. It's how we got through it, you know, how we played a lot of our Premier League football. We're a very physical side. We weren't afraid of putting a challenge in, but I found that a lot of what they were putting in last night was quite nasty on that way. But I thought we handled it well. I know in the previous games when we faced the physical teams, we've turned a couple of players have almost seemed a little bit worried about it. We're taking a step back, but we didn't seem to do that last night. I was... By half time, you know, it's only halfway through the game. We're not a goal down. I'm still feeling the same way as I do at the beginning of the match, really. I see that they're playing good football. They're playing passing football. They're doing well. They just need to get that on product. And after seeing the way they played against, they were managed to get the goals against Wigan, I wasn't doubting anymore that they could get that on product. And obviously, they came out in the second half and they did. And they got some good goals from it. And they were some good goals as well. So, at half-time, very much the same feeling as nervous, same feeling as when I'm going on at the first whistle. But I weren't too worried about it. If it would have been maybe the week before that Wigan game, then I would have been like, this is the same old story. You know, we're not going to come away from this with what we want. But after seeing them score them goals at Wigan and the fact that, you know, there's been so much talk about a striker, well, these goals are coming from everywhere now, aren't they? And the fact that we do have those players that we can either... that are starting or we can take off the bench that are going to make an impact, it just gives you a bit more confidence for definite.
Yeah, there's a fine line, isn't there, with the physicality. I think, so I always keep harping on, under Dyche, we were always very physical, but also had one of the best disciplinary records in every single season. So I think we did it in a way that wasn't like dirty. And that first half there were some nasty little challenges. What did you make of the refereeing in that first half, Dave? Obviously, three yellow cards, only 1 minute of added time, which baffled me a bit. But and what in general are you making of the refereeing so far this season?
Indifferent. I think there's it's perhaps to be expected to some degrees. If you've got the supposedly cream of the referees there in the Premier League, then the likelihood is that the quality isn't going to be as good, same as the quality of football isn't going to be as good in the Championship. I thought the referee we had on the opening day was very good. We didn't really notice him. That's really what you want. I thought that whereas you do want referees to let the game flow, you don't want them to be unduly lenient. And I thought that the referee on Tuesday against Millwall was very lenient in the first half. He let a lot go, whereas perhaps if he'd cracked down a little bit earlier, then we might have had a better game for it in the first half. He could have got his card out a lot sooner than he did. I guess he'll say that, you know, he wants to keep it 11v11. He doesn't want to send any players off. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned about the added time as well. You know, there was so much time wasting going on for about the first 5 minutes, and the referee goes like that, taps his wrist to say, you know, I'm adding this time on. And then at the end of the half, there's 1 minute. It's like, well, you clearly aren't adding that time on. There should have been probably at least 3 minutes at the end of the first half, and there wasn't. But yeah, in the end, it didn't cost us, and I guess that's the main thing.
Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting. When the board went up, Company just glanced up at it, and then it was Bellamy who came onto the side and gave fourth official an absolute ear bashing about it. So I think they all got the roles within that coaching team. What did you think of the chances in the first half? Obviously, the keeper did make a couple of saves from JBG free kick, and then the follow-up from Taylor. Do you think we deserve to be ahead at half-time? I'll stay with you, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, the big chance in the game, probably the rebound from Charlie Taylor was the biggest chance of the first half, although obviously there was the free kick as well. The other opportunities were more from distance, so you're probably less likely to expect goals from those. But I think you would have hoped that we would have got a goal in that first half. We couldn't quite do it, but we did show we were showing patience all the way through, really. And as Charlotte mentioned already, the crowd were sort of on board with that. There wasn't any unrest, really. The crowd stayed with it and got their just rewards.
Yeah, and I think it was a really good point as well that you made, Charlotte, about keeping the calm and not being affected by that approach. They did seem in control the whole way through. We've seen Benson at Watford obviously lose his way a bit after getting a couple of challenges. We saw Mattson lose his head and get sent off stupidly against Blackpool. I think, yeah, it's really important that they do keep their heads. Moving on into the second half, and it were more of the same for the first 15 minutes. When were you happy with the changes that we've made when they did come on? Obviously, Benson coming on for JBG, having the biggest impact. And again, talking about options off the bench, what did you make of Benson when he came on?
Yeah, I thought it was very much similar to when he made his debut and he came on and he made an impact, and he seemed to be a player that were raring to go. He was very forward. I think I referenced before, it looked like he had Velcro on his boots. It was very similar last night, and it was nice to see, because after that knockback at Watford, I thought, if this is what he's going to be like when we're facing such physical teams, then it's going to have a negative impact on the way we're able to play. But it was nice to see that even after the challenges that he obviously saw in the first half, that he came out and he didn't seem drawn back by it. And obviously he made a huge impact there for us. We're so lucky now to have so many options to bring in. And I think, obviously, we'll touch a little bit on deadline day and things, but the fact we've had such a fantastic window this season, it's been brilliant, and I think a couple people are wishing for a couple more, and it would be absolutely fantastic. But just to have them extra options in all areas, I think we want, and that's why people are looking, maybe they're wishing for a striker, they're wishing for a centre back, that type of thing, just to have them extra options, because we've seen how well it's worked in other areas on the pitch, just to have someone else to bring in and make a difference. And you could see if it's very similar in the first half, where we're just struggling to break them down just in that last third, and then you can bring someone else on who's going to make that difference. If we have that all over the pitch, if we have someone to cover every area all over the pitch where they could come on and make an impact, well, you can be unstoppable then, can't you? And I thought he was fantastic again. And I was singing his praises on the first show, and then I thought, oh yeah, he didn't have a decent game afterwards. Oh, I've got to come boom, I didn't stand now. But no, he definitely made up for it last night, for sure. And it were a pleasure to see him back to what we saw when he first appeared.
Yeah, and on to the first goal. Obviously, Benson heavily involved with a cross to the far post, and Vitinho there to tap in. Great ball. What did you make of it, Dave?
Yeah, well, I think Benson made a big impact when he came on. Did seem to change the game, open it up a little bit, give them a lot to think of down that right-hand side. And it was it was him that got the ball across, and perhaps a surprise for the goal scorer, Vitinho, getting the goal at the far post. But it was definitely coming, and Burnley deserved it when it arrived. And I think once that first goal went in, It was you couldn't really see Millwall getting back into the game. They'd kind of come with the game plan of getting a point or a 0-0 draw. And they'd have been happy with that, I think. But the fact that we went in front, they were never going to get back into the game after that. The way the game was going, you couldn't really see them getting back into it.
Yeah, and then on to the second goal. I didn't realise how many passes were in the build-up until I saw that tweet today. 25 passes, all 11 players, and obviously finished by J-Rod. How can you argue with that, Charlotte?
I know, it shows a patience thing, doesn't it? I've seen people getting a lot of stick on the socials, on Twitter, about harping on about, you know, patience. You've got to be patient with them, and when they're passing it back, when they're passing it around. And I thought, well, they've got the rewards from it, from that goal, because I was sat there and I didn't realise how many passes were in the lead up to it until I watched it, like you said. And I think a lot of people have been talking about the Hendrick goal that was very similar, and the amount of passes in the build up to that, and it was very, very a similar type of thing. And I thought, it's so nice to see the hard work, the passing, the possession paying off in that way. And I love J-Rod. I every time he scores, I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I think if he can stay fit this season, he's going to have an absolutely fantastic season. And it's going to be brilliant to see as well, because he's had it coming for a long time. And, you know, he's a homegrown lad, as we say. He's always a huge part of our town, our team. And it was fantastic to see him get yet another goal, especially after it came from that possession. You know, the fans were giving... seemed like the fans were giving the team a bit of a stick the weekend before, you know, with regards to maybe passing backwards or sideways or not hoofing it up long, as some people say. And it was nice for them just to turn around to us almost and say, be quiet, be patient, it's coming, and we'll give you a goal on end of it, which is what they did.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. I know it's still early days, Dave, but can you feel that progression already with the style of play and the sharpness and the fans as well getting used to it and becoming like more on side with it?
I was just going to go back slightly to the comparison made with Jeff Hendrick, because I was at Goodison Park for that Jeff Hendrick goal, and I was doing the commentary with Phil Bird for it, and I didn't realise for that goal how many passes there were prior to the goal, and I was doing the commentary for it. So you can lose track of it within a game, and the same applied even being there on this Tuesday with regard to J-Rod's goal. But it was a patient build-up, and I think we have that in our locker now. That's the way we play. And it will take time for fans to... for a larger proportion of fans to get used to that. It's going to be difficult after what's gone before. It always takes time to adapt. It takes time for the players to adapt. It also takes time for the fans to adapt as well. But that is the way we play. And that's what we're capable of doing at the end of it.
Yeah, obviously we had a couple of injuries where Tello went off. I think company said after the game it was cramp. But Muric went off with a shoulder injury. What have you made of Muric so far, Charlotte? And how big of a blow would it be if he is missing for a few games?
I think everyone knows how I feel about that fella. I love him. I said before, I absolutely love him. And it was so... we were talking about how the fans' opinion is changing. And it was quite evident last night with how the fans tend to react to Muric. The weekend before, they were almost taunting him, you know, as he was knocking it about from the back. Obviously, it didn't work in our favour a couple of times, which will happen over the season, but they were almost taunting him. And I thought, that's not the way we are. We're there to support him. But last night, you could see that as he got on the pitch, they were chanting for him. They were going with his name. And he was actually physically enjoying it. You could see it. He was like, put a fist pumping in the air and stuff as they were doing it while he were playing. And I thought, his ball to Teller for one of them were fantastic. Teller got a boot like a pillow, that lad, because I have no idea how he can keep that first touchdown like that. But I thought, yeah, he was fantastic. I love him. It felt like a blow when he went off, and I guess we'll have to wait and see how long he's going to be out for. From what I gather, he's not going to be at West Brom, but hopefully he'll be back in contention for next week, which we're all hoping for, because although I thought Peacock Farrell, when he came on, He might not have had loads to do, but he did make a couple of good saves and he managed the game well. You know, we were on about Tam Wason earlier on in the game for Millwall, and I think Peacock Farrell did lie on the ball a couple of times for a few extra seconds, but it's all about game management. But now we've got used to Murick's style of play and the team have got used to Murick's style of play. We don't want to take a step back. I always feel for goalkeepers when they have to come on as a sub because it's such a vital place and they don't get subbed on that often. And I was hoping for when Tom Eaton got injured and Nick Pope came on and were fantastic. I was like, it's all right, Peacock Farrell's going to be the same. And you know what? He didn't make any mistakes and he made a couple of good saves and he managed the game well. But I think because we're so used to Murick's style now, it will be a setback when he's not starting for us on Friday. And hopefully he'll be back in the team sooner rather than later because I love his presence. If you watch him during the game as well, when he's not even on the ball, the interaction that he has with the other players that anyone's close to the back, or even fans sometimes, like you think, are you paying attention to the game because you turn around talking to these? But it's quite a nice interaction to see, and I think we haven't seen much of him, you know, any type of interviews, that type of thing, but I think as we do, we'll see that he's actually a really likeable fella and he's hard to miss anyway. In the big, all the green, the whole way through, it looks like a onesie, big fella in the middle of the net. And yeah, I love him. It gives me the nerves. Still can't watch any time we might concede. I don't watch any goals we do concede, and I will stay that way forever as much as anyone tries to change me. I have to watch them back, but no, I thoroughly enjoy his style of play from now on, and I think he'll do wonders for the season as long as this injury is nothing too drastic for him.
So who were your man of the match from last night's game, Dave, or the game against Millwall?
There were quite a few contenders in there. I think the sponsor's man of the match was Josh Cullen. That was I thought he had a quieter game, but there's plenty of players you could have picked out. Jay Rodriguez would be a good shout. Jack Cork didn't do anything spectacular, but just seemed to control the game. I'd have been tempted to actually go for Jack Cork. I don't think maybe there'd be that many agreeing with me, but I think just the way he controlled the game, he stood out to me. So that would have been my choice, I think.
And what about you, Charlotte?
I agree. There were so many that you could have given it to last night. I thought they were fantastic. I thought as a team they were fantastic, and there were some brilliant individual performances as well. But I think I'd go with Nathan Tellababy, just because I thought some of the football he were playing last night, like I said about his touches and things, he has complete control over the game when he has that ball, and I think he's such a fantastic signing. If any, you know, Southampton people are listening, he's rubbish, you don't want him, just sell him as soon as possible to us. But, you know, other than that, I thought, yeah, definitely Nathan Teller for me last night.
Yeah, for me, like you said, it could be a few, but J-Rod just gets better and better this season. You can really see him getting stronger every game, more confident. I think he linked the play really, really well last night. And we're getting consistent performers already. Like you mentioned, Cullen, Cork, Howard Bellis, Taylor's doing really well in that adapted position. Let's hope they can keep it going. And talking about keeping it going, we'll now look ahead to our next match, which I already mentioned is away at West Brom on Friday evening. But as we always start the preview show, we'll look back on the quiz question, which I haven't got right in front of me, Dave. So do you just want to read out the question and the answer for our, and did any of our listeners get it correct?
The question we left our listeners with in the previous episode was, what was unusual about Burnley's home game against Millwall in the Championship in September 2022? Sorry, 2002. We're going back 20 years to the game from 2002.
Yeah, and I didn't have a clue with this one. Did any of our listeners get it correct?
We had two. We had a couple of our quiz regulars, Jan Gesileski and also Tim Holden, got the correct answer, which was that there were no away fans, no Millwall fans, were allowed into Turf Moor for the game. They'd had some trouble the previous season. They decided to ban arbitrarily six sets of away fans from down there, and Burnley decided to play retaliation and say, well, if our fans aren't allowed down there, then yours aren't allowed here. So for that game in September 2002, there were no away fans. And I do remember We didn't have any away fans in the cricket field stand at that point. I mean, going back in time, there were. But they allowed people to get tickets in there, or if you were in other parts of the ground, you could switch and go into the cricket field stand. And I did switch. I went in there for that game. I think it finished 2-2, if I remember right.
And on to Friday, we make our trip to the Hawthorns. They've had a bit of a hit and miss start to the season, like quite a lot of teams, typical Championship. Have you got any memories of games against West Brom at the Hawthorns, Charlotte?
No, not for me. I've never been. Never been down there. And I'm not going on Friday either, with it being a Friday night game. And it's pretty difficult to get down when I'm working, I think, until about 6 o'clock. So pretty difficult to get down. And hopefully, you know, at some point I'll be able to go down. But unfortunately, I've never been down to the Hawthorns. It's one that I'll have to try and tick off my list at some point.
Yeah, I've been a couple of times, and like it's a bit of a theme when I've come on the show. We've not really done very well. Don't want any spoilers, but I don't think I've seen us win at the Hawthorns. How is our Championship head-to-head, Dave?
Well, just before we do that, I've seen us win there because we won when Ashley Barnes scored that spectacular goal.
Of course, I wasn't there then.
We haven't won many times down there, so I've been to a couple. I've seen us lose and I've seen us win, so that was all right. I have had a victory there. But yes, going back to the Championship head-to-head, Burnley have faced West Bromwich Albion in 65 previous league seasons. That's a total only matched by one other opponent, and that's Wolverhampton Wanderers. And as Wolves are still playing Premier League football this season, West Brom will become our most common league opponents, a stat which might surprise some people, although regular No Name Never listeners may be less surprised, as this was the topic of one of our quiz questions last season. In terms of the splits between levels, we spent 47 seasons together with the Baggies in the top flight, 17 in the second tier before this season, and just one in the third tier. We're focusing on the second tier meetings, and as this Friday's match is away from home, we're going to look at those 17 previous meetings at the Hawthorns. Both clubs were founder members of the Football League, and so there'd already been several First Division meetings before our paths crossed in the second division in the 1901-1902 season. By this time, our hosts were already playing at the Hawthorns. That's the highest league ground in England, following a move from their Stony Lane ground in 1900. 10 of our second-tier away trips to the Hawthorns were prior to the Second World War and produced 3 Burnley wins. Remarkably, the first of those was in 1905, on exactly the same date as this season's meeting, 2nd of September. Goals from Bernard Murphy and Doug McFarlane enabled Burnley, who played in green in those days, to come from behind to win 2-1. On the 2nd of October 1909, Burnley beat top-of-the-table Albion by the same scoreline, 2-1. And the third pre-war win was also 2-1 in February 1939, which was also Burnley's first away win of that season. We've had 7 second-tier trips to the Hawthorns since World War II, but none of them have produced a Burnley win, with the Clarets drawing 2 and losing 5 of those matches. That's not to say the Hawthorns isn't a happy place for us, as we've had several times we've won in the 1960s in the top flight, and more recently, that game I mentioned in 2018. In total, out of Burnley's 17 previous second-tier away games against West Brom, we've won 3, drawn 4, and lost 10.
Oh dear, that's not very good. Hopefully we can improve on that record come Friday night. Well, we got our first win at Wigan ever, which I didn't know was a record before that. So hopefully this is a season of firsts and we can put down a marker. I think the next feature is Played for Both. Have you got any names that stick out from players that have played for West Brom and Burnley, Charlotte?
Yeah, I've got a couple after I've had a look at it. Mine are more of the newer players. So one of my favourite all-time players has got to be Beast So I seen that he played for both. I didn't have a clue. But yeah, as said earlier, he's definitely one of the standout players. The next one on the list was one of my all-time favourite players, Charlie Austin. You know, I absolutely loved him when he played for us. I have a cat named after him and everything. I have no shame in admitting that either. So I was quite happy to see his name on the list. There's a few, obviously, more recent. I think, like we said, J-Rod's on there, Chris Wood as well. Some of the more recent players that a lot of us all recognise those names. I love it when I look through and there's a lot of names that I recognise on there. Sometimes I don't always, but I love seeing a few that I recognise. And we've shared some good players with them and some players that have had key impacts on our team and our season as well. But they were the ones that definitely stood out for me, and J-Rod for certain, with him being in the team now, stands out. And I think he's definite talking point, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And what gets me the last couple of times, like a lot of the players have been like within the time I've been watching Burnley. I don't know. I think I might be just getting a bit old. What were the names that stood out to you, Dave? I don't know if you want to give a summary of the list.
Well, it's quite a lot to go through. There's 26 in total, so I won't list them all. Other ones that stand out, Richard Chaplow is in there. Brian Jensen's already been mentioned. There's actually five goalkeepers that we've mentioned, Beast, but there's also Paul Crichton, Andy Marriott, Gavin Ward, and also Anders Lindegaard. He only played a couple of games for us, and he never actually played a league game for West Brom, but he did play a cup game for them, I think. Other ones on there, Frank Sinclair, James O'Connor, and Matty Vidra, Chris Wood. There's a lot of players in there. We'll try and put the list out when we tweet it out. But there are a lot of players in there who've played for both clubs, quite a few connections going back.
Yeah, I think the goalkeepers for me, Crichton and Jensen. Obviously played a big part in us getting promoted through the leagues over the last couple of decades. So, yeah, some really interesting names in there. Moving on to the memory match. What have you got for us this week, Dave?
Memory match. In the absence of any recent second-tier wins at the Hawthorn, we did mention there have been seven times we've played there in second-tier games. Since World War II. So we're going to go back and remind our listeners of the last time we visited West Bromwich Albion at this level. That was in the 2007-2008 season. And a match which involved a couple of players from our Played for Both section. The match took place in early February 2008, which you will recall was in the early months of Owen Coyle's time at Turf Moor. He'd been appointed as manager the previous November and was starting to get a team together ahead of our highly successful promotion season of 2008-09. Burnley took an early lead in this match in just the third minute when Robbie Blake's free kick into the box was headed down by David Unsworth to former baggy James O'Connor to poke the ball home for the opener. In the 26th minute, Bosjan Cesar got on the end of a corner and volleyed in an equaliser past another former baggy, we mentioned him already, Brian Jensen, who was playing in the Burnley goal, and it remained 1-1 until half-time. However, the next goal also went to the home side when Roman Bednar got on the end of a left-wing cross to finish with a towering header to make it 2-1. The home side were also awarded a penalty in the 68th minute after John Harley fouled Robert Corran. Corran took the spot kick himself, but it was saved by the Beast. He had a habit of saving penalties, you may remember, and he also watched the rebound go wide of his left-hand post. The score remained 2-1 to the home side, and as we mentioned earlier, this was the seventh time we've met at this level since 1945 without a victory, although we have won once more recently in the top flight, which was that game in 2018 we mentioned earlier. It's sure to be another tough game in front of the TV cameras this Friday evening.
Right, on to the referee, Dave. Who's in charge on Friday night?
Well, he hadn't refereed a Burnley match prior to this season, but James Linnington from Newport on the Isle of Wight, who took charge of our season opener at Huddersfield Town, we touched on that earlier on in the show, he's back for a second bite of the cherry at the Hawthorns this Friday evening. I don't think the Clarets fans had too many issues with his performance in that game, and we were all too busy getting accustomed to Burnley's new brand of possession football to notice much about the man in the middle, which, if you think about it, is the way it should be if they're doing the job well. Since then, he's shown one red card in the six matches he's refereed. I think he's been fourth official for three and refereed six. And the man he sent off was Sunderland's Dan Neil. That was for a professional foul in their match against Sheffield United at Bramall Lane. And there didn't seem to be too many complaints about the decision from the Sunderland fans. So let's hope he has another good game on Friday evening.
Yeah, let's hope so. There was the Ashley Barnes penalty, weren't there? But overall, yeah, he did have a very good game at Huddersfield. So hopefully we'll have a repeat this Friday. Now on to Friday's game. Would you make any changes to the starting 11, Charlotte, if everyone's fit? Obviously, there's the potential injury of Murić, but other than that, would you freshen things up or stick with the same?
Yeah, I don't believe in changing a winning team. Like we said, obviously, Murić may be a forced change. Peacock Farrell may come in for him there, which might, again, we haven't seen much of him, really. He's played some cup games, that type of thing. We haven't seen much of him otherwise. So it'd be interesting to see what type of difference he'll make and whether we'll have to change our play or whether he'll just pick up straight away the possession football we play and whether he'll also favour the playing out from the back, that type of thing. So whether that'll force a couple of changes, we don't know. I think, is it right that Mattsson would be back? Has he done his three games now? Can't quite remember.
I thought maybe he had. Is there one left?
No worries. Even if it wasn't, I think he'd have to be fighting for his place. Even if he was available, I don't see how he should be walking back into the team at the moment. There's a few people that might disagree with me there, but I don't really agree with changing a winning way. I think the team that started in a winning game, there was no reason that I had no complaints of any of them. The subs that came on were impact subs, and that's what they were. And if you then decide to start them, you might not have that same impact. And I think if we change our winning way and it goes wrong, then we know what to blame. It's a blame game then, isn't it? Whereas if we stick to what we know and it's not going the right way, we've got all our options on the bench like we've spoken about, we can change it up there. But other than the obvious possible goalkeeper change, and I'm hoping that, like company said, Tellers is just a bit of cramp and it's nothing that's going to impact any games going forward, really. Other than that, I think we stick with what we've been doing.
Would you stick with the same team if possible, Dave?
I was quite surprised we did on Tuesday. I thought with the games coming thick and fast and having Saturday, Tuesday, Friday, that Vincent Kompany might have taken the opportunity to make a couple of changes. He has players who, we saw them introduced from the bench and the impact they could make. I thought he might have used more of the squad for that, but maybe he's thinking more along the lines of, I've got a side that's played really well and settled. I want to do that if I possibly can. So I don't know. It will probably come down more to the injuries. I think maybe, possibly Teller might, even if he is fully fit, might be given a role from the bench. But he's what a player to bring on for the bench. We saw what he was capable on Tuesday night. And whether he's starting or coming off the bench is more than capable of changing a game for us.
I think what I found interesting as well was the subs that came on Saturday at Wigan. So Bastian and Chernilov didn't come on Tuesday, even though they came on and both did well, didn't come on Tuesday. So it's like he's using the full squad, but obviously that starting 11 did stay the same. I think the obvious one for me would be JBG, Gudmundsson. Obviously he's played three lots of games now, three lots of 60 minutes, obviously, but still that's more than he's played in a long time. So whether you mentioned the other day, whether they'll be careful with him. So it wouldn't surprise if they made that change. But yeah, like we said the other day, one or two changes. I don't think it'd do too much harm. We've got the options. What do you think represents a positive result on Friday, Charlotte?
A win's a positive result in any case, isn't it? I think the way we've been at the moment, the fact that we're coming off two wins, you go in and you want another. You don't want to lose that kind of hype that we've already built. I'm always a believer in a point-to-point, so I'd say anything's better than losing, isn't it? But I think we want to keep up that dominant display. You can see how much it's doing for the players when they're on and off the pitch. When you see them on social media afterwards, the stuff they're sharing, they're really buying into it, and it helps the fans buy into it a lot. And I think it does so much confidence level to have these good goals. Obviously, we don't want to get too carried away. You know, it's the Championship. Anything can happen, as we've seen. It's not smooth sailing all the time, is it? You have shocking results where you should have won, you shouldn't have won, whichever way. But definitely hoping to go in with the 3 points just to continue on the high that we are at the moment. I think I saw something on Twitter before about the fact that Charlie Taylor had never scored a goal for Burnley, and I was like wishing for him on Tuesday, and then he nearly did, and I thought, oh, here we go. So my absolute optimal outcome would be a win and Charlie Taylor getting his first Burnley goal, because now I know that he doesn't have one, I feel really bad and I really want him to have one.
Yeah, excellent. What about you, Dave? It's really a good point, I think. In the Championship, if you can string that run of wins together, you really do fly up that table, which has shown after only a couple of wins, we're up to third. Do you think it is important that we carry on that run, or do you think a point away from home is still a good result at a place like West Brom?
It is amazing how things can change this stage of the season. I think prior to the Wigan game, we were something like 16th in the table going into the game. And then 2 wins later, we're up to third. So it's, and I know some teams haven't played when last night. But the way it is, it can change so much. And it is very early days in there. And you see teams, I think Forest last season were way down after 15, 20 games, weren't they? And then came on a real run. So, yeah, momentum is good if you can get it, if you can get the points on the board early on. A draw isn't a bad result away from home ever. And I think that we wouldn't be too disappointed if we came away with a draw on Friday. And that will be my prediction. If I was going to predict, I normally get castigated by Natalie for sitting on the fence and giving a 1-1 prediction where I don't think we're going to win. I think an honest assessment is it will be a 1-1 draw. Obviously, I hope we win, but it's heart and head, isn't it? I think maybe head's thinking it might be a draw. So 1-1 is going to be my prediction for this Friday.
Yeah, we're going to go on to predictions next. Who's getting the goal?
J-Rod for another. I think he's on a roll.
Yeah, on his way to George Poole's 15 predicted goals for the season. Well on his way. What's your prediction for Friday, Charlotte?
Well, we're on about heart and head. I'm going with my heart. I'm going with 2-0 win. Even if we're on at points of good away from home, whatever, we'll have a win, thanks. I'll have a 2-0. I want Charlie Taylor to get one of them. And then I love Josh Brownhill, so I'll go on another screamer from him, especially after the window's closed and no one else is looking in for him there. If his name's on the sheet, then it's always good, isn't it, if he's not gone? So, no, I'm going with my heart. I'm going for all 3 points, 2 goals, and those two lads to shine for me.
Nice one. I think I'll go with you, Charlotte, and be in Natalie's camp this week and be optimistic and I can't go for a Ben Mee header anymore, but I'll go for a 2-1 win. I think it will be a tight game. They're not going to roll over at home. They're under a bit of pressure. So I think they will come out fighting, but hopefully our quality will show. And I think next is the stat of the week, Dave. What have you got for us this week?
It kind of follows on quite well, really, because it relates to Burnley's goal scorers. We are sharing the goals around the team so far this season with 6 different scorers in the 7 Championship games to date. We've already mentioned top scorer Josh Brownhill in our last preview show, but Jay Rodriguez has now joined Nathan Teller on 3 in joint second place. Ian Mattson, Samuel Bastian and Vitinho have all scored 1 goal each. Speaking of Vitinho, who, as we know, is Brazilian and only cost $1 million, his goal against Millwall on Tuesday was the first time that a Burnley player had scored with a header during the current campaign. In fact, it was the first headed goal in any of Burnley's games so far this season, as no opponent has managed it either. And as for a bonus stat this week, we mentioned a Burnley away victory against West Brom on the 2nd of September 1905 among our three pre-war second-tier away wins. But the two teams also met at the Hawthorns exactly 100 years ago, a match that took place on the 2nd of September 1922. On that occasion, it was the Baggies who won 2-1.
Very good. So you mentioned the goals being spread about, Dave. Do you think we do need a striker before the end of the transfer window, whether it's to support Gerrard or to come into the first team? Because Company from the start said he wanted the goals to be shared about. Everyone was sceptical, especially after we've had goal scorers in the past, like Andre Gray, Vokes in both seasons, Ings, even Patterson, looking back on all of our promotion seasons. Is Company right? Are we good with what we've got, or are we desperate?
Well, yeah, I think in his heart of hearts, I think he would like to have an out-and-out striker who's going to score him 20 goals. Although, who knows, maybe he wants two more wingers. We might get another couple of wingers in the before the transfer window shuts. Nothing would surprise us the way this summer's gone. It's one of those things. At the moment, the players are scoring the goal, sharing the goals around pretty well. But you could do with that striker who's going to score a lot. And you know, who knows, Jay Rodriguez could be that player. He's scoring the goals already. Josh Brownhill's chipping in, Nathan Teller. We do have the players who are capable of doing it. And if you can get, you know, you get three getting sort of 15, 16, 17 goals, that's pushing you forward. And plus the other goals coming in from elsewhere, then that'll be fine. But yeah, I think in their heart of hearts, we would hope there would be maybe a surprise of a striker before the window closes.
And just at the other end of the pitch, Charlotte, do you think we need to add to the defensive ranks before the window closes? We've been linked to Kiate from Metz. Doesn't look like it's happening, but what do you make of that end of the pitch?
I think it's very similar. We, to make what's been a great window, a fantastic window, there's a lot of talk about, like you said, bringing in a striker and then possibly someone that has more experience at centre-back. I thought Taylor's been fantastic, you know, where he is, doing what he is at the moment, but having just that extra voice that has more experience in that area would make it a fantastic window. I don't think we're desperate for it. I don't think it's something that's going to make or break our season necessarily, but it's definitely something that we could add to it just to give us even more options. And I think it's the same, like you said, with the striker. It's something that's not going to necessarily at the moment make or break a season, but it's definitely a way to add to the squad that we've got. I think if we get someone in those two positions, it'd be an absolutely fantastic window. And with the way things have been going over this transfer window, who knows what's going to happen on deadline day. We have no idea who's going to come in. There's been a lot of surprises along the way. There's been a few that we've been linked to that supposedly there were no reason to be linked to them. And then there's been some lads that have turned up when we haven't heard anything about them for the weeks before. So it's very exciting. It's quite new to be excited as a Burnley fan on a deadline day. But I'll definitely be having the notifications on my phone anyway tomorrow.
Yeah, it's been an interesting summer. You never know, we might get a couple more reveal videos from the admin team before the end of Thursday. Right, on to the quiz question for this week, Dave.
We have another quiz question, and it is, Burnley will be looking to make it three consecutive away victories on Friday night, following our away wins at Shrewsbury in the Cup and Wigan in the league last Saturday. But can you name the year and the three opposition teams when Burnley last strung together three consecutive away wins? And to clarify, that is just that excludes friendlies. It's just for league and cup games.
I think I know what my guess would be. Obviously, I'm not going to reveal it right now. But there's one run of games that spring to mind. But anyway, would you have any idea with that, Charlotte?
I think I'm probably thinking along the same wavelength as you at the moment, just with what's happened in the years and what we remember. But we're not going to give it away, but I think I'm definitely on the same wavelength.
Oh, we'll see next time. Oh, how can the viewers submit their answers, Dave?
In the usual way, the best way is to send us either a direct message on Twitter, that's at NoNayNever. You can email the dedicated preview show email address, which is preview show at nonearnever.net, or you can reply to the post on the Facebook page, the No Never Facebook page, and any of those methods, and we'll read out the correct answers on the next preview show.
Brilliant. Right. There's no FPL update this week, as again, we're halfway through a game week, but before the, who have we got next? Norwich at home preview show. We'll have a league update and be revealing our No Name Ever August Manager of the Month. So we'll look forward to that. Any other business, guys, or are we good to wrap up? Anything from you, Dave?
No, it's been a packed show this week, hasn't it? Covering two games and previewing another, we've squeezed a lot in. So I'll leave it at that. I won't add to that today.
Any Vitinho song, Charlotte? I'm sure everyone saw that on Twitter last night.
Yeah, well, it one show only. Sorry, unless he scores again on Friday, and then obviously it'll be a two show. But no, if anyone's not seen it, I have no shame, as we see. I wasn't actually expecting it to be shared out of the group chat, I must say. And when I did see it, I got to be very careful about that. But now I know that people are going to share other people's videos. No one's safe. But no, feel free to enjoy it. I have no shame, not embarrassed about it at all. And yeah, I am more than happy to be singing the songs. Means we're winning.
We'll hold you to that if he scores again on Friday. Right, that's it then. We'll wrap up. Thanks again to Dave and Charlotte. And as always, producer Matt, for knitting all this together. And for the music, George Gaskill. And finally, to the listeners, on to Friday night at the Hawthorns. Up the Clarets. Until next time.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.